And I like some of the don't do things. Don't speculate or offer unnecessary opinion. Don't state legal, what you think or legal conclusions. Don't be funny, sarcastic, mocking, or threatening. Or, use vulgarity. I have another case right now for a very sophisticated organization, and some of the very senior executive level salespeople have very colorful language. And so there are these emails that have already been projected, in court with F words and, threats of, kind of this bravado about what they're going to do to the other side, how they're going to crush them and F them. And, it's like it's all fun at the time, and then it's not. All right. So any other thoughts on the Chevron Smart Communications program?
I just think one of the things that we did that I thought was particularly effective is we tried to take real examples of things that folks had said to any of us or to each other in a written communication and put those out without, of course, naming people. But I'll give you an example. See if I can find one. I wonder whether we ought to be taking a fuel deduction across the board. That would be put in an email. And then you talk about what the pros and cons of putting something like that in an email were. Why did they need to do that? Is it speculative? Is it fact-based? And giving them an actual hypothetical like that and saying something like this really could and may have happened here in Chevron, they feel differently about listening to it than just saying, use the facts.
And you can see, in a lawsuit, if the issue is should a fuel deduction have been taken, that's devastating because it's basically internal admission that this was an issue and it was never done.
Exactly.
So going back to some rules, negotiations yield the concept of honest dealing. The ethics rules require us, when we are involved in negotiations, to be honest. Rule 4.01, in the course of representing a client, a lawyer shall not knowingly make a false statement of material fact or law to a third person, or B, fail to disclose a material fact to a third person when disclosure is necessary to avoid making the lawyer a party to a criminal act or knowingly assisting a fraudulent act perpetrated by a client. And I think, again, most of us never really encounter this, but where we might get close is failing to disclose a material fact. For instance, if you're involved in a negotiation for a contract and you know that your company has entered into a prior contract that makes performance of this new contract impossible, failure to disclose the existence of that prior contract. Say you know that your company is going to perform the prior contract, which is inconsistent with this contract under negotiation. Arguably under Texas law, the negotiations regarding the second contract could yield a claim of no intent to perform fraud. We're about to enter into a contractual obligation that we know we're not going to perform because we have this other contract with a client that we like more. But on the second deal, there's some side things we want to get. So we're not going to tell, the second counterparty we're not going to perform something they consider important. So, under the ethics rules, it's an issue to consider. Is the existence of a prior inconsistent contract a material fact that should be disclosed? Then rule 8.04, paren 2 to 4, a lawyer shall not commit a serious crime. Most of us don't have that problem. I guess that example I read earlier, he had that problem. Three, engage in conduct involving dishonesty, fraud, deceit, or misrepresentation. Most of us don't have this issue either, but we can kind of get to the borderline of it. Christy, how have you ever seen anything like this in your experience?
No. I think I would agree with you that knowing about the previous contract that would keep you from being able to perform on the new contract is a material fact. And if I was in that situation and I was talking to my clients and discovered that would be the end of it. I just wouldn't let that happen. We'd have to figure something else out. Either we'd stop the negotiation or try to amend the first contract or whatever we would do. With respect to the misrepresentation piece, it's just really not an issue for us, I think, because we have such a strong what we call Chevron Way culture. It's the tone at the top, you know, do the right thing, and ethics and all of that is really prioritized, and we have demonstrated action taken if that's not the case. So I really don't deal much with that.
You know, another thought that comes to mind about the inconsistent contractual obligation negotiations, any attorney-client communications regarding that second contract would arguably come under the crime fraud exception to the privilege. So, you know, if all this comes out, then the advice you give regarding the second contract, such as, you know, you shouldn't do that, can probably, the privilege can probably be pierced. And then you have an even bigger problem. You know, it gets worse, which shows the importance of dealing with it, escalating, reporting up right then, and shutting this down. Now, you know, in negotiations, there's also puffery, and the Texas rules don't address this, but the model rules do. And of course, the concept is that you know, certain statements are ordinarily not taken as statements of material fact, and you know, are still fine. And in talking with Christy had another observation about how, you know, about how to kind of consider whether something is puffery or a statement of material fact.